Welcome to month two's Investival ETR briefing. Today we're presenting the trading period from the 1st of February to the 28th of February. I suppose I should begin by saying this is the anniversary of our first briefing back in 2020. And I suppose what a truly amazing, unbelievable and obviously scary time the last 12 months have been. And here I am making briefing number 12, and in doing so, as I should, I'm doing my best to remain positive in what we all know to be an incredible time in our lives, or indeed in our history. But anyway, so welcome to briefing number 12, and let's move on. As the document explains, the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services supplied to investment quality companies, or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. So what this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another, and typically these tend to be larger companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators, because they originate the debt obligation transaction that creates the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange by these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. By doing that, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that it settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates the margin. And as I think you probably all know, this is the margin that creates the yield of return for investors. So credit exchange also provides credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides the liquidity and is paid commission for doing so, much in the same way as a bank charges interest. As the briefing states, at the end of February, credit exchange held active RSA of 17.5 million. RSA, as you know, stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium sized business or the originator and the exchange. So the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange at any given period. And typically it's for 1 year. So, for example, I give the same one every time. You have an originator that needs a revolving credit facility of 200,000 to run their business. They come to credit exchange under the name of Convertible to convertible.com in Ireland, convertible.co.uk in the UK, or Trade Credit if it's outside UK, Ireland is another name that they come through. They come to us much like they would a bank, and they apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the 250,000 on a revolving basis every 60 days, let's say, they must agree to sell us 250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for 1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. So we then take that commitment to sell 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange. We document it in the RSA, and at the end of February, as I've said, we held 17.46 million of these active RSA contracts. During 2020, we saw an overall decline in active RSA contracts, and as I discussed, the trading patterns, the speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycle, and indeed the increased use of letters of credit or LCs in our business, has contributed to that. this is mostly attributable to, I should say, the trade finance and or shipping sector. So as we go further outside Ireland, UK, the use of letters of credit, etc., are speeding the settlement, which means the RSAs are coming shorter. Also last month, I also pointed out that there was a significant increase in leasable assets. So in the 12 months of last year, at the end of December 2019, for example, we had assets of 1.7 million after depreciation, but by December of 2020, the leasable assets were over 5 million after depreciation. So removing the depreciation, that means our leasable assets went from 2.5 million in 2019 to 7.5 million in 12 months. So suffice to say, we'll in quarter two, we'll include that second aspect of our trading to more accurately reflect the total usage of the investors' funds, not only in investable trade finance, but also in leasable asset finance. Last month, we went through all these figures when I went through the audited accounts for 2020. As this briefing is about February's trades, similar to January, they continued to disappoint, to be candid. At the quarter end board meeting yesterday, some time was spent discussing the current credit exchange trading position, or lack thereof. As with the year-end accounts, we were overcashed, and that was not good and is still not good. An efficient market should see circa 90% of our funds in the market, and that's simply not the case at the moment. We have the RSA contracts to support these funds, but we could turn these trades faster or put more ETR to work if we could find the ETR to fill those trades. And that's down to our deal pipeline. So our deal pipeline still remains high, but we aren't trading, why aren't we trading more? So we can talk about originator confidence and their lack of optimism and all the other excuses we can choose. It could even be that it's okay to state that we're simply having a bad quarter. Maybe markets are dysfunctional. Maybe there's less demand. And for these and other reasons, we're not trading enough volume and value. Speaking to and for the board, excuses are a distraction from poor performance or a remedy to it on our part. So for those at this meeting, they need to look below the top line sentiment. You, like us, should be more concerned with risk. And as discussed at yesterday's board meeting, as disciplined traders, we absolutely must hold our line. The temptation to break policy and to trade should not and will not happen. Remember, we're an exchange, so we may be market makers, but we're not risk takers in making that market. So we are going to hold our line. Risk will always trump trade, in my opinion. And that's not lip service to compliance. We're actually very serious about it. So you and your investors were and are and always will be concern number one. So best to say you're listening to the person responsible for driving trade. That's me. I'm not making excuses. It's not my style. My job is to report back next month with a better story. But if trade hasn't increased by the end of quarter two, and worse was then to repeat in quarter three, there is a serious issue that hasn't been addressed, because we're looking at it now. So let me report back on it. Best to leave it there. Our performance so far this year hasn't been good, but then again, remember what I said in December's briefing. For those of you who missed it, the prediction was that 2020 and 2021 was going to be a carbon copy of what happened in 1920 and 1921. So last month, whether it was the Hellenic Shipping News, Lloyd's List, Seeking Alpha, or a host of other news feeds, the news is the same. we're on the cusp of a shipping boom that is not going to be like the stock market theory known as Elliott's wave. The theory sees waves of different frequencies that overlay, leading to small booms and busts part of the time, and super booms and busts and cycles, hence the term super cycle. This time, the commonly held belief is that because the capacity for new ships is insufficient to meet growing demand, and fossil fuel ships are reaching obsolescence, container ship leasing rates are at decade highs, and rising as current demand for worldwide containerized trade far outstrips the ship's capacity to deal with it. So this means that the supercycle phenomenon won't be a series of highs and lows. Rather, the rates are set to go much higher and stay high for the foreseeable future. So the slew of delayed trade and back orders caused by last year are going to be compounded in this supercycle prediction that was already pent up since the back end of 2019. Apart from container shipping, Lloyd's List also points to the dry bulk sector, where it also anticipates a supercycle over the next 2 years. So the dry cargo order book is so low at the moment that it'll take at least 2 years before additional capacity begins to make an impact on freight rates. So ship owners will benefit from this strong freight rates, and they may struggle to persuade the cargo owners to pay for it, pay for the premiums. But either way, there's a squeeze to the positive, and all the indicators confirm it'll emerge in the second half of this year. Another news source notes that the dry bulk rates are reaching heights that have not been seen in the past 10 years. And the Blue newspaper Tradewinds spoke earlier this month about exercising caution on the use of the word S, or as it calls it, the supercycle. They say that while experts say it is too soon to claim that we are entering a commodities supercycle, there is certainly an upside for shipping markets and investor interests. The positive sentiment it states is partly influenced by an en masse pile-in into dry freight derivatives during February. They go on further to quote Jumana Salahin, who's a chief economist at commodities research consultancy CRU Group, who seeks to calm the nervous excitement in the market with the positive response that there is going to be a bit of a rally and commodity prices may remain high next year, but it is not a super cycle. That means it's going to rise and it's going to hold and it's going to stay for, as I mentioned, starting second half of this year, and it looks like it's got a good 24 months of stable trade coming out of it. Then, of course, while I'm talking about shipping and freight, it'd be remiss not to mention the impact of the current Suez Canal blockage that started last week. So this single shipping route, albeit one of the three busiest canals in the world, was blocked in the early hours of Tuesday morning this week. Already there's almost 200 ships backed up on either side of the canal. And what looked like a minor incident that could be rectified in 24 to 48 hours seems to have developed into a more serious situation that some say could take a week or weeks to clear. So according to JP Morgan, this single incident is already affecting energy commodity prices, for example, oil, that's had its biggest single day gain in nearly a year, and all down to one single incident on the Suez Canal. So for those of you wondering why the canal blockage and shipping super cycles have anything to do with trade and credit exchange, it's simply because shipping is the artery 90% of the world's trade passes through. So if shipping is set for a two-year boom, it's trade that's going to drive it. And if trade is set to boom, then exchange traded receivables, or ETR as we call them, are set to surge as more supplier payments and debtor settlements occur. And the task for me and all the members on the deal desk here is to make sure that the markets that use shipping lines and trade finance facilities are fully aware that convertible and trade credit are there to support their activities. It's not quite a case of build it and they will come. It's more a case of, for all of us on the trade desk, our deal desk more correctly, need to ensure we're in that market, that the market is aware we are there and that our message is clear. We're here to help finance your trade. It's simple to explain, but maybe not that simple to execute. So let's see if we can take early advantage and change the current year's performance while we're at it. And even if we're not early to market, the fact that there is so much pent-up demand is all good and underlines the prediction from December's briefing that 2021 H2 will see a surge in trade. We're in the quiet before the storm, hopefully, right now, and everything's already in place or soon to be delivered to ensure we maximize the benefits that the surge will bring. Meanwhile, though, we must resist the temptation to move into poor performing or riskier transactions, because if we know the second half of the year is going to be strong, smart money says we have to wait. So we have to hold the line, as I'm calling it, and be ready to rise with the surge as it hits our shores. Actually, I use the word shores. I must say I'm somewhat uneasy, including Ireland, in that statement. Sadly, I think we're not going to benefit as much as we'd hope. We've got our own bit of Suez Canal blockage closer to home, where our Evergreen ship might not be back sailing. The Evergreen ship might be back sailing in the next few days, but I'm not sure the same can be said for our economy, because we've got our own bit of Suez called Brexit. And our Evergreen appears to be a group of health officials that seem wedged into the two canal walls of bad news and lockdowns. As promised at the end of last year, I'm not going to talk about the pandemic, and I'm not. But when the World Health Organization states clearly that we in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as the primary means to control this virus, the fact that Ireland has experienced the longest lockdown of any country globally is simply and singularly wrong. The longer this economy remains closed, the harder it will be to get it moving again. And we need to conquer Brexit today, not next month or June or maybe next year. Ireland needs to be back in business and at work now. So every day is a prisoner. And unfortunately, our government seems content to be led by medical advice alone. In the context of business, people's fortune, national prosperity, to say this is sad, terrible, and even to the point of being reckless, in my opinion, is an understatement. But enough said on local news. Our focus is on the UK, the EU, and markets further afield. We'll return to our own shores when they're ready to trade again. But notably, of all the trades we're currently examining, 40% of them are Irish, but none of them are trading inside the 26 counties. So it seems we're not alone in our strategy. So as opposed to the strapline shop local, any Irish company seeking to survive at the moment is doing everything except shopping locally. By way of an update on how things are changing internally, last month I mentioned the renaming of the deal desk that deals with originators. Originators, as you know, are the micro to medium-sized businesses that generate the ETR. I also discussed the deal maker system that was being finalized and documented, and the pending introduction of the new DealMaker software. Suffice to say, this work has been completed and the DealMaker system has been formally adopted as our improved mechanism for writing business. From now until quarter three, it'll largely be a manual process. And as the six-month development plan for version one of the DealMaker software began last week, I'll keep you informed of its progress over the next six briefings or so. You also may recall we completed the main development of the Credit Machine core engines in mid-February. Initial testing over the past 4 weeks has proved positive, and today I'm told it'll go into production testing I think it's on Wednesday. Yes, Wednesday. So that'll run for most, if not all, of quarter two. There's still another circa 6 months of development work there to complete the remainder of the system before we can say it's, in inverted commas, finished. If there is such a thing, a status in a system that's proprietary to your own company. But it's certainly on plan to be in full production before the year's out. Thereafter, it'll be the rollout of external apps that communicate with, external apps that communicate back into the credit machine. Again, there'll be more on this in the form of an update over the next two or more quarters of briefings. Returning to the briefing itself, it states that there was 22.51 million fully allocated, and this is a decrease on the January figure of circa 27 million. What this fully allocated figure means is that the exchange had held 22.5 million worth of ETR on the 28th of February. This means that there was 22.51 million of investor funds in the market on the last day of February. If you add that number to the RSA of 17.46, that represents future orders in our books that have not yet filled. It just rounds out to a total of circa 40 million. That's another 5 million down, or 10% drop, on the stronger position the exchange held in January. And it's a 20% drop on what we held in December, when it was 50 million. Not to labor the point on how this year has started, but as stated, it was discussed in some detail at yesterday's board meeting. And Michael Keegan, as one of the board's members and an ex-senior official with AIB for many, many years, commented on just how dysfunctional markets are at the moment. He talked about the seemingly endless amount of liquidity looking for safe havens, whilst at the same time mentioned the brutal terms and conditions banks are enforcing on borrowers in the new homes mortgage sector. The board consensus was clear and confirmed our current stance is correct. 20% down is not a concern, and indeed there were several comments on what was deemed to be a fair performance to date, despite the adverse market conditions. Moving on to the next figure, February's briefing shows that investors redeemed almost a third of a million in the month of February. As with prior months, there was nothing unusual in this movement. It would be lower than the value of funds withdrawn in February 2020, but the ratio of money in versus money out would be similar at 5-4, meaning more funds came in than went out. So for every 4 euros that left the exchange, 5 were coming in. As is typical, these investor funds were a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB, and PRSAs, with private investor savings making up the balance. As you can see, the investor inflows continue to outgrow the withdrawals and are consistent with prior year's trends. The current economic and social crisis remains good for Investable, with continued liquidity and stability in our market as the year develops. This brings the briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 105 days. And this number, as you know, is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. The number appeared stable for the past 2-3 months at the mid-90 mark, but this increase to 105 is an almost 10% increase. So the exchange's average credit index is 75, and what we're seeing is a further move away from the norm to 105, or a 40% slower settlement, and that has to be hurting the micro to medium-sized business sector. And on that note, it's beyond annoying to hear the ERSI announcement last night about their cutting the expected growth in the Irish economy by half a point. Genuinely, in God's name, I'm not sure what they're talking about. I'm certainly beyond, the market we serve. If ever there was an example of an ivory tower, news from them is excruciatingly misleading to the general population. If you look at your local market, look at your local industry, or look outside the window, Mr. ERSI person, what's he talking about? A reduction in growth by half a point? If you take a look at the figures we spoke about in November, at that briefing, we said that two-thirds of Irish businesses that we serve were experiencing a reduction in income of an average of 45%. So I think when he says half a point, we'd argue that there's, to most indigenous Irish businesses, it's more like half, just half meaning 50% type of half. But anyway, sorry about that. But it is annoying when you can see what's happening on the ground to hear announcements that are so far off the mark as to be irrelevant, as irrelevant, I should say, as they are annoying to the business people that we know are struggling and in many cases failing on a daily basis. Maybe there's a secret meeting somewhere where all our health officials and economic analysts are getting together to make up these misguided nonsense to feed us all with. But anyway, wandering back on topic, and again, sorry for that. The credit index here, this is the average duration or the number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. So it's the cash to cash cycle from the day the ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So at 105 days, we're still a ways off the credit index all-time high of 134 days from June of last year. But the 10% increase in February is something we will, as always, keep a watchful eye on. Specifically, the 10% means that originators are starting to feel increased pressure on their cash flow and the revolving credit facility requirements that had some stability over the last 2-3 months. It's starting to experience further strain. As explained at every briefing, the credit index is an economic indicator. And it's the current global depression has not left our market, or certainly not yet. Returning to the briefing, then it talks about the trading result of 3.98 million in February. And this again is a poor result when compared to the same period in 2020. It's a drop of another 10% on January's figures for this year. Below that, below last month's trading figure of 3.98, you'll also see that the same period treasury performance was just over 9 million at 905. And this means that we spent roughly 4 million and collected over 9. So no, there's no surprise in this figure. Trading is down, so settlements have to go up. This continues December's overbalance of inflow because trade purchases are below that of trade settlements. So, as always, and daily, the trade desk and treasury continue to monitor this trade balance of funds, funds in versus funds out, to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy. The credit risk policy is what governs the risk and the general exchange trading policies. The inflow, outflow of trade and cash during December to February and the significantly higher collections are also affected to an extent by the credit index. But overall, if you're trading less, you're receiving cash back in quicker. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 28th of February. And as you can see, the HSE and Huawei continue to hold their slots as they've done now for 12 consecutive months. As of January, we see the repeated appearance of Atradius and Vodafone and the return of Cork City Council. And this time, the absence of Musgrave from last month. Total Produce makes a return after a long absence. PRM Ireland and GH Lettery appear, along with some other newcomers. Moving to the top-rated investable E2R holding on the right-hand side, there's the regular reappearance of Fleet Factors, Volkswagen and others. These are the highest-rated debtors, and as none of these were investment-grade or have an investment-grade rating on the 28th of February, this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the actual amount of their liability. So it's simply a selection of the most creditworthy. As has been the case for the better part of last year, and therefore a total of 12 months, or for a year now, the pie chart below these two sets continues to demonstrate a significant change in what was typically a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. So the HSE in Ireland, the NHS in England, along with others in the health and community, are pushing back towards the April 2020 high of 25%, showing 18.67 during February. That's roughly a 50% increase on December's value of 12.7%. And will no doubt continue for the foreseeable future, would be my guess. Since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale slash retail market. And as per prior statements throughout last year's briefings, this is more wholesale and food retail based, not high street fashion and such like. As you may well know, Dunn Stores, Musgraves and others make regular appearances on our top 10 largest holdings. Looking at the wholesale trade, this does continue to perform well and remains at almost 40% of our market. Food and beverage has increased from 5.26 to 7.33 in February, with both manufacturing, the business and services sector remaining stable and true to form at roughly 10% each. And unsurprisingly, there's been a 50% decline in construction, as it moved from 9% in January back to 6.67 in February. The pie chart still continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system, and the adoption of our own credit classification is a component part of the new credit machine software. I've mentioned its current status earlier, and I'll keep you updated on that over the next two quarters and beyond as required. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in February of 2020 versus February 21, you can see that the trading values remain down at 60% at the 60% mark, and they're just set of that at 57.44 for February. There's been an improvement in volumes that are still down too, but not quite at 30%, with slight improvement at 26.49 in February. Investor redemptions were slightly lower than the same period last year, and as mentioned earlier, are 5-4 money in versus money out. We've discussed the credit index at 105, and this is a good indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing here in Ireland and the UK at any moment. As stated, at 105 days, the market is off the base by more than 40%, and is a further 10% disimprovement on the last 3 months, where it hovered around the 95 mark. Section finishes with the note that we have 6,200 creditors, or debtors and creditors, at month end in February. And to finish on our performance in February, the largest single trade was just under a quarter of a million. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa €2,000. But we've traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at 230,000. And coincidentally, is a repeat of January's number. The coincidence is not important or worthy of further comment. Moving to the trends section of the February briefing, prior to this meeting, although the text is reporting the correct data, the graph image on the right is incorrect. So apologies for this. The graph has been updated. So if you downloaded the briefing this afternoon, the image has been corrected. And again, apologies for that. The correct image is one that starts high on the left and tracks downwards. So in February, it started at 1.865 and bounced downhill to 1.70. So as the briefing states, when you compare this to the negative almost 1% yield on the bank deposits, and the investors are getting a yield that's 2.75% better from exchange traded receivable on demand cash equivalent offering by the exchange. As you all know, this rate changes daily and can be checked at any time on the investable.com website homepage. To discuss this trend in a little bit more detail, the graph on the right shows the movement during the month. We started at 1.865 and it tracked down to end at 1.7. To finish this briefing, you'll see a repeat of the active RSA at circa 17.5 million. And that concludes our briefing for February. Thank you.